I'm starting today with Vayetze and Vayishlach together. And I'm going to compare something in Bereishis with something in Sefer Shmuel Bet. In Bereishis, in the life of Echo, in Shmuel Bet, in the life of Dove. Okay. Sure, I think this came up in this class. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that an Ovel may not duchen the whole year for his families. You cannot muster the necessary frame of mind to have a peaceful, harmonious attitude in order to be a kli, to be a grand prophet to his people. The whole year he can't do it. Right? Corollary to this is that a Kohen who, I'll give you just an example of the case the Gemara gives, a modern example, he's driving along, and a kid runs right in front of the car, he kills the kid, and they never do him for the rest of his life. There are some caveats here. Even if the car had good brakes and good steering, and his reflexes were good, he wasn't impaired, right? Every other person on earth would do the same thing. And yet, he cannot daven for the rest of his life. There's different opinions as far as Ashkenazim and Tshuva, but on the face of it, he can never daven again. He took a life. Okay? However, this is a psak based on things we find in the Rishonim, with Raya's from the Gemara also, that, let's say, I was just at an army base right outside of Gaza a few weeks ago. And there's a group of soldiers who are getting ready to daven. Right? And they've got their tefillin on. And a terrorist infiltrates the army base. And the Kohen sees what he's about to do. He grabs him from behind, takes out his very sharp knife and slits his throat and cuts his head off violently. He's allowed to duchen right there on the spot, 20 minutes later. Now, the whole thing is about how your sense of inner harmony can be jarred by what you just did. Surely the guy who's driving along can defend it and can say, listen, what else could I have done? I had everything. And this guy violently cuts off, sounds like what Pinchas did, right? Pinchas violently spears two people together, and according to the Netziv, beautiful Netziv, Pinchas could not have continued to function as a Kohen except for the fact that God blessed him with what's called Brisi Shalom, a blessing of inner peace and harmony. But because of that, he was able to function. Now, what's the essential difference between the Kohen who kills the terrorist and the Kohen who kills the child in the car? Why the different psak halacha? One is seems to be more violent than the other. Anyone?
He's doing it to save his own life and those around him.
And therefore, I say, beyond that.
So, this, first of all, the action he's doing is on purpose. So, he's at peace with what he's doing.
Say that if you ask these two men, listen, this is what's going to happen to you today, right? Would you do anything differently? Of course, the man who was in the car would say, I'm taking the train to work today. going to stay home today. The other guy is going to say, I would do everything the same way 100 times. Right? It's a matter of choice, matter of... Right? Now, the case of David and Shmuel Ben is, of course, when he saw a woman bathing from a distance, right? And his desire was piqued. Right? Kings... I think we can start to record.
Yes.
Oh, good. We're on. Okay. And kings are used to getting what they want. And he goes through every bit of his planning to make it happen. Right? Okay. Chances are, if you would ask David, would you do things differently that day, he probably would say, yes, I would. Knowing what ended up happening. Right? Maybe, I don't know. Bathsheba became his wife and the mother of the next king. History is different if he doesn't take Bathsheba, I guess. Before I take any questions, what I want to do with these two charts is to show that Yaakov's action in taking the bracha from Esav is something that the rest of Sefer Bereishis is going to remind him of. Right? What David did with Bathsheba, the rest of Shmuel Bet is a reminder of what happened with Peretzal. And we're studying Bereishis here, but I just want to show from Shmuel Bet that David spends the rest of his life atoning for this, and the atonement works. How do I know? Because not only does he get to build the temple that God told him his son would build the temple that God told him he would build, the son he has with that woman, with Bathsheba, actually builds that temple. There is a Medrash in Medrash Tilim that says that David thought that God would reject him. And then when he learned that he was still able to build, to prepare for the temple, as is recorded in Divrei Hayamim, that David sang a Perek in Tehillim, a very famous Perek in Tehillim that seems to not make sense on the face of it. You say it every morning. Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid. Really? In what way did David make a Chanukas Habayis on the basic Kiddush? Unless he's talking about a different house. But you know, we say that on Chanukah because the Medrash says that this is talking about the Chanukas Habayis for the Beis HaMikdash. Wasn't David rebuffed for building the Beis HaMikdash? No, no. He sang this when he learned that his son would build the Beis HaMikdash. And the big Kiddush is, David, I accepted your tshuva to such an extent that the son would hurt. Anybody learn the first paragraph of Ksuvus? The test in the Sefer Ksuvus asks the question, how do we reconcile what David did with Bathsheba? You say that the tshuva, he's not supposed to stay married to her. Right? Did you hear that? How can he stay married to her? He's living with her in sin. Alright, he got away with it. Nobody knew that our warrior died. But he got away with it. So that the prophet comes up to rebuke him. He says, Gam Hashem Hervir Eschatras Chalot Tamus. You should die, but you won't. God needs you. You're going to spend the rest of your life doing penance. Now let me finish with Shmuel Bet so we can get to Bereishis. You did two things. You broke up a family. It was a husband and wife. Doesn't seem to be any children in the story. It's interesting if you know, if anybody know the basic storyline, there's a parable in there with a sheep and the rich man and the poor man, and the, right? You all know what I'm talking about? In that parable, the owner of the lone sheep loves that sheep very much. Remember? A little too much information about how much he loves that sheep. He says he eats to eat at the same table, she sleeps with him, he treats her like a daughter. This is too much information, David should say. What are you telling me about this man? All right, but get on with it. What's the question? Right? According to the parable, it would seem that Uriah loved his wife very much. But according to the storyline, it seems that he did not love her so much because...
He gave her a divorce.
Well, he gave her a divorce because he loved her. He didn't want her to be an Amruna if he doesn't show up at the end of the battle. But right, the Gemara says in Tzuvos, that's the tough test, in Tzuvos that he gave her a conditional divorce or, according to Rebbe Tama, a full-fledged divorce. But the point is that the story has the king tell him to go home to your wife, and he doesn't. Now, it could be because he's a man of great honor, and I don't want to have comfort with my wife while my men are in battle. But you have a good excuse to go home. You haven't seen your wife in months. How could you not go home? Right? So there's this, some of the story seems to say it wasn't a good marriage. Some of the story says it was a good marriage. The fact is, it doesn't matter. Adultery is adultery. You can't excuse adultery. Well, her husband was beating her. Okay, then that's still a married woman, right? So he broke up a family, and he used the sword of Ammon in doing so. Right? He had him go to the front lines against Ammon, right? The rest of Shmuel Bet tells how David does penance for these two things. His family gets broken up, and the sword chases him. The rest of Shmuel Bet. Okay, enough for Shmuel. Now back to Bereishis. At no point does God ever come to Yaakov and say, Yaakov, how dare you cheat your father? Does God show any form of acceptance or rejection of what Yaakov did?
No.
Nothing. Right? I mean, there's no text that says that Yitzchak went to Yaakov and said, Yaakov, what made you do this? Who told you to do this? Right? Yaakov is according to Shah, 77 at this time. He works for Laban for 14 years, and he's 91 when Yosef is born. He's at least 77. That's the Rashi talks about 7 missing years. He's not a young guy. So his father said, Yaakov, where did you ever behave this way? That would explain. Did Yitzchak ever find out that his wife was behind it? But anyway, the text doesn't tell us how Yitzchak's confrontation with him. It just says that he sent him away to find a wife. Right? Why couldn't you just send a wife to come down like we did for me and your mother? No, because Yaakov has to run away because it's not just to find a wife that he's going. He's got to escape the wrath of his brother. Right? Vayetze Yaakov miber sheva to escape Esav. Vayele charana is to find a wife. And he's leaving for two reasons. Right? Got it? In the very beginning of Parshas Vayetze, Yaakov sees sees the angels coming down up and down the ladder. God does not rebuke him at all for what he did. So here is the genius of the rest of Sefer Bereishis Chevra, and this is what we're going to do from here on, at least from the standpoint of Yaakov, is that the rest of Sefer Bereishis, beginning with Vayetze, and today I'm just going to give you the general picture of Vayetze and Vayishlach. It's all part of what Tanakh does best. We are imperfect people. We mess up. The Avos mess up too. It's the commentary of Ramban that points it out. It's not about the mess up. Mess up is inevitable. It's all about what you learn from it. The redemption. The fix. Some people learn, some people don't. Some people experience it more than once. Right? Remember, a question on your exam was, Avraham only prayed for himself, for his childlessness, and therefore had to suffer through a detour to have the child with Sarah. Right? That detour was named Hagar. If he had only said, Anachnu holchim aririm, things might have been different. Right? So Yitzchak learns from that. In Parshas told us, it says, Vayatar Yitzchak l'Hashem l'nochach yishof, Yaakov rahi. And he's the only one who does not deal with the infertile situation by taking another wife.
I think I might have missed this. For David's two sins, the first was a breaking of the family. But what was
second, he used the sword of the Ammonites to kill Uriah. Right? He seems to get away with it.
What would have been a better way to have...
He tries to cover it up by having him go home so that when she gives birth eight and a half months from now, he'll know why. At his home. But when he doesn't go home twice, and he sees he's not going to, I'm in a big hurry here. She's pregnant already. Right? So he sends her away. And it says, as soon as the shiva was over, it says she mourned for him for a week, and as soon as the avil was over, he could have took her in. Right? You can't do that. You have to wait 3 months. No, I can't wait 3 months. By that time, exactly what I'm supposed to wait for is going to manifest itself, and it's going to be trouble. It's amazing that cover-up is on the table. Hopefully he won't be a redhead. Sending him away to die is on the table, but abortion is not on the table. There were things called kosher ekrin. The ancients speak of it. A pregnant woman could drink something, especially very early in the pregnancy, and abort. Maybe it wasn't very safe and healthy, but that's not on the table.
Would that have been logically on the table? I mean, I guess none of.
I suspect that killing this fetus would have been better than killing Uriah, but not if you want the woman. David is all in by now. And the prophet says, you should die for this. But you won't, and you're going to spend the rest of Shmuel Bet. Right? The stories afterwards are ugly. Tomorrow now, no, with Absalom, his treatment of Ziba and Mephibosheth.
But putting Uri on the front line, is that an act of murder of him, or just setting...
Prophet, this is famous Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, but when the Gemara in Kedushin speaks about the prophet telling David, you killed Uriah with the sword of Ammon. No, I didn't. I told him. Yoav didn't kill him either. He just sent you out to put a soldier any way you want in a mission. Right? Alright, Uriah was one of David's chief generals. He's listed at the end of Shmuel Bet as David's top general. Very strict. That's why he didn't think it was unusual that he was called home to report on the battle. If he was just a regular ensign, a regular private, he'd say, why is the king calling me to report on the battle? Right? And don't tell me he was a Hittite. He was a Jew born in a Hittite in Kriti, wasn't it? Some try to answer, well, she wasn't halachically married. She was married to a Gentile man.
Who was Bathsheba pregnant with this time?
A baby that died at the age of 7 days.
Maybe it was technically a bouncer, right? Or not necessarily.
The Gemara in Ksuvos has two opinions answering that question. The Gemara in Daf Tes in the Seches Ksuvos says that a man who commits adultery is forever prohibited to the woman with whom he committed this act. And she's also forbidden to her husband as a result of willingly committing adultery. Right? She is forever forbidden to her husband and forbidden to her paramour. Right? So the Gemara says, okay, so David did tshuva, the prophet said you should die, but you won't die. But wait a second, she's forbidden to David. The Gemara gives two answers to that question, and only one of them is really known to any of the prophets. What's the one that's very famous to all of you? One of you just hinted at it. You hinted at it.
He gave
her a conditional divorce that says, and all men do this to this day when they go to battle, when they go to war with married someone, if they're married. They say, if I'm taken prisoner, or if you can choose not to marry, of course, but if I do not return by a particular date after the cessation of hostilities, you are considered divorced from now. Not from then. Dead men can't give again. You're divorced from now. Okay? So the Gemara says that Uriah gave her something else. Right? Since he ended up not coming home from battle, so she was the Mafreya, a free woman, and that's probably an opinion you've heard. Shabbos Daf Minvav, Exodus Daf Tes, the end of Sanhedrin, all the Zohar Daf Dalet, it's all over Shas.
Kind of sounds like it was better that he died at battle than
like that. So Rabbeinu Tam says, I can't accept such an explanation, because David, part of his original covenant, was to send him home so that he would be seen as the father of the child she's bearing. Excuse me, that puts a new date on this conditional get. Doesn't it? Surely this would, the Mafreya, make his act adulterous. So Rabbeinu Tam says that the get was a full-fledged get. The men didn't just give their wives these conditional divorces. They gave their wives full-fledged divorces, and they're free, you know, only because I love you and I'm going to come back and remarry you. But I'll give you any at that time. Just come back to from the battle, give her a gift. And say, here, I found this, now we're married. You need a couple of years. Right? But it was full-fledged divorces, according to Rabbeinu Tam. Otherwise, David is shooting himself in the foot by sending him home. Right?
Okay, so one opinion is that was the second opinion?
To Rabbeinu Tam. My problem with Rabbeinu Tam is that if that's really what's happening here, then David should have called Uriah home from the battle. Don't send him home to his wife. Say, Uriah, I have good news and bad news for you. I have a sense that you don't really love your wife so much because you did, you've gone home to her. The good news is that when this battle is over, you have a summer home up north, you have a winter home down south, you are free from taxes for the rest of your life, and every child that you're ever going to have has free college. And vacation every year in bed. Right? In other words, give him an extraordinary, it just, and I'm buying your complicit silence. The wife you were hoping to come to remarry after the war is over is not available to you. Keep quiet, and all those things will happen. And I happen to have five wives for you lined up, one in each place. In other words, why did you have to kill him? If she was divorced. The whole thing is unsavory, however you look at it. Right? Here, the prophet does not shy away from telling everything as it is to David. Chapter 12 is a long soliloquy of all the things David did and all the things that are going to happen to him, and it's all spelled out in Shmuel Bet. But for Yaakov, nothing is spelled out. God talks to him glowingly 10 psukim later, in the beginning of Ayetze. Not a sound, not a note from Hashem, nor from Yitzchak. Certainly not from Rivka. Right? Okay? Now, let's try to defend Yaakov. Because, yes?
Yeah, if David ended up doing all these things, like, first of all, you got to kill him on purpose, plus he is, like, falter. Don't you think of him as a Russia? Like, a lot of people, we don't think it's good people never did anything like that.
Okay, just remember, the king does have the right to send anyone he wants on any kind of mission. You know, Yoav didn't have to listen. Right? He sent a note in Uriah's hand to give to Yoav. Put him on the next battle where the very courageous men go. And
good, but he broke up family.
Okay. It's a, yeah. I don't seem to be children here, but But there is a, you look up a husband and wife. Bathsheba doesn't do too bad in the story, you know. She becomes a queen, she becomes the mother of the next king.
Do you ever find that Bathsheba herself was like upset about the whole affair?
I have to hope that a woman married even to a poor man would rather stay married to her than to anyone else. To him than to anyone else.
So was she like great?
So that's what I said the second answer. How did she go willingly to David? How did you go? You should tie yourself down and say, I'm not leaving. I'm a married man. You see, when she goes to him, it says, Vatavoe love. Usually it's Vatavoe love. But here is an interesting thing. It says he sent messengers. Yishlach malachim to pick her up. I wouldn't send messengers. I would send a messenger. Why send two people to complete it? What do you think the king wants from her, huh? You know? Send one at a time. Right? I think what he did was he sent one messenger numerous times. She kept saying, no, I know what you want.
Well, she was intimidated.
He keeps asking. Now, I just excuse this foray for a moment. When Hollywood was still respectful to biblical characters, there's a movie called David and Bathsheba from 1951 with Gregory Peck. She confesses to him, he beats me. I hate him. It's an abusive marriage. We have been intimate once, and he's a career military man, and he is always in battle. I purposely revealed myself to you when I knew you would be walking by. I've been casing you, and I know when you walk by your patio at night. Right? Wow. You know what? Adultery is still adultery. And he says so in the movie. He says that people still don't, not going to stand for this. We have the law here. And by the way, in every other country in the world, certainly at that time, in many countries today, the prophet points his finger and says, you're that man, you're that rich man who took the lone sheep of that poor man. You all know what I'm talking about right now in the parable, right? You're that man. The prophet says, the prophet says that, and then goes on a long diatribe against David. Any other country at that time, that man is dead before he has a chance to finish his sentence. Don't accuse the king, right? Just as an example, I don't mean to use this as a benchmark, I'll get you in a moment. Saddam Hussein had thousands of Iraqis in jail and would reduce the sentence of the Iraqi men if the wife, for every time he would have sex with the wife, 1 year off. He slept with hundreds and hundreds of women that way. One general had the chutzpah to tell him, your Excellency, these are Muslim women. This is adultery. This is forbidden. His head was on a platter at the next cabinet meeting. This man questioned what I did. He said, oh, okay, good. Again, I don't mean to use him as a benchmark, but there are despots. But that's what the world was back then. The prophets do not tell the kings what to do. Right? That's why Shmuel tells Shaul, think of this if you know your Bukias, when Shaul didn't wait for him the requisite 7 days to prosecute the battle against the Philistines and offer the korban, you know what I'm talking about? Shmuel was told by Shmuel at that point already, you lost your kingdom over this. What? Over this? Yeah, because you made it seem that the Israelites win battles because you have a good king and a good strategy. We win battles because of our prophets, not because of our kings. So the prophet does get to point a finger at David, and David listens. It's an important point for the story. Yes?
I really don't want to ask this question, but like a theme that we've had thus far is people wanting more than they're entitled to and losing. Is there some...
That's in my villain course.
Yeah, and I think we've touched upon it. Cosmic power, just more than their titles.
So did Duchess.
Is there...
lists 11 characters.
Yeah. Is there some relevance here that Dove is trying to, like, take more than...
Yes. Yes, because a king always feels that in the very next story, the very next story is one of the great villainy stories of the Tanakh, is David's firstborn son, who ostensibly can have any woman in Israel, or any 18 women in Israel, right, will be dying to step at his doorstep and become his wife. So he can have any woman he wants. But when you're raised like that, yeah, he falls in love with his sister. When you can have everything you want and no one ever questions what you say, and you're never given, never held up to what's called good behavior, expected behavior, you start to want the things that everybody knows you shouldn't want and shouldn't have and can't have. So he falls in love with his sister. You see, according to our understanding, our ethical system, that doesn't make you a villain quite yet. The real villainy comes in what you're going to do to get what you want. To what measure will you go? David should have gotten the picture already, right, when she turned down the first, second, and third messenger, or, you know, at some point, that this is... You remember in the parable, there's a rich man and a poor man. The rich man has lots of sheep. The poor man has just one sheep. And what makes the rich man take the poor man's sheep? To do what with it? Why does he slaughter the poor man's sheep?
To feed a guest.
To feed a guest. Now, you gave the guest is the middle term that the pasuk gives to describe this man. At first, it says, a halech. You hear that word? It seems only once in the Tanakh, this pasuk. A halach. What do you think a halach is? Passerby, exactly. Traveler, someone who's just walking by, came to the rich man's house. Mistami, he knew him, maybe from grade school, right? And then it says that he refused to give the of any of his own many sheep for the guest that came. Now it says for the oreach, right? Instead, he took the one lone sheep that poor man loved so much to give, and now he calls him El Ha'ish Abahila. It's all one pasuk. You parrot your base pasuk down. Halech, Oreach, Ish. The rich man is David, the poor man is Oreah, the many sheep is David's many wives, the poor man, the one sheep is Bathsheba. Who's this Halech? With Musa coming up here. Who's the Halech? Who's the thing that makes the rich man take the poor man's sheep? Come on.
Yetzirah.
Sukkah Dafnun Beis, the big sugya on Yetzirah, the end of the sukkah. Because the Yetzirah starts off as a halo. Right? Now, some of us take a shortcut and go straight to Orei Harish. That's where you go looking for things. When you go on a website, you know you shouldn't be looking at. Now, thankfully, some of us have inhibitions. Strong inhibitions, like you may go to jail for something like this. Right? Or if, you know, I must tell you, I have for a number of people, anytime they go on a website that's for a few it's gambling, the more it's, you know, things for your eyes, it's called eyes. Good eyes. But, I think it's called, yeah. But they choose a person.
Oh, Kavanagh.
Kavanagh, right. It's an original story of Krishna.
Yeah.
So, anytime they go on a bad website that's ruining their lives, I get, and I call them. I said, listen, you know I know what you're doing. Right? Okay. So that person is going straight to Ishur. Or hey, but the halach for most of us, the Yetzer Hara just you know, it just I didn't go looking for it, but I was walking by. Whoa! I didn't turn away from that. David didn't go looking for her. Right? The fact is that when you know the direct dichotomy where the prophet says you did this secretly, I'm going to have your women taken under the sun in front of everyone.
Where is that?
Remember where Absalom is convinced by Achitophel to take David's 10 wives and rape them in front of everybody on this rooftop? the same roof with David Sorb and Sheva to begin with. Why does the Torah, the Tanakh, care so much that you wear that act?
Right.
Roof is like you open for everybody to see. So, the... Right, so the Yetzirah here is, you know, it starts off as a, it just passed by, but for a king, for someone like Amnon, the Yetzirah goes very quickly from Oreya to Ish, when you're used to getting what you want. Right? We all have urges, and urges are good. We're supposed to have inhibitions to cut off the ones that are not so good. If by experience we see, no, this is because they've gone well for me the last time. We just not go there. But the HR is very good at convincing you. Right? Now, let's get to Yaakov now because we're voracious. What's his Yetzer Hara? Because I know from the description, from the moment he was conceived, and the Torah says, listen, get this good. By Yisrael Tetsua, by Nimbikir Bav, why are they struggling inside? Right? Rashi wasn't sure if the Shorish is by Yisrael Tetsua, we talked about this already, was to struggle or to run. So Rashi gave both. They're struggling. Hey, I want to get out first. The irony, of course, is that neither of them know that the mother was told that the one that comes out second will prevail. Right? And then he's born holding on to his heel. That could be a common thing for twins. Right? But the fact that the Torah tells it, and that he gets his name from that, is a further indication that these two boys are separated from, even though they're twins. They're separated from the womb. They're separated even before they're the womb. There's no reconciliation between these two. Don't second guess Rivka that if only Yaakov admitted that Esau should get his bracha, then things would have been honky dory between them. Don't go there. I know in their youth Yaakov wants this. Tell me why.
Because of the thing with sick.
Yeah. Now, don't make the mistake of thinking that Yaakov sold a bowl of soup for a birthright. That's what the Christians did throughout medieval Europe. They said, you Jews are always behaving like Yaakov. We are always being abused by you and your money-lending practices and your taverns and your... Really, Jews are being abusing the Christians? They used that as a pretext to wipe out whole communities. Right? Amazingly, in these Bible disputations, the Christians side with Esav. They say we're treated like Esav, and you're taking advantage of us all the time. Right? Which made many commentaries try to justify what Yaakov did as much as possible. What Yaakov sold for the birthright, I submit to you, is not written in the Torah, the Treshbam. It says, Yaakov nosan le'esav. He had given, otherwise it would have said, Vayitain Yaakov in biblical Hebrew. Yaakov had given him something of great value. You make up what that is. Coin collection, baseball card collection, rock collection, something of great value that Esav always wanted to have. They're kids. Right? Is a birthright something you can sell? Absolutely. It's Esav acting immorally in the story. Why? When Yitzchak told him, go out and get me some food, I'm going to give you my final bracha, Esav should have said at that moment,
I sold it.
This may disappoint you, Daddy, but I sold it. Now the fact is, Esav himself seems to admit as such. Remember where?
Afterwards, after the whole
time. Really? He did this twice to you? When was it? Yes, b'chor asila kach. You never told me that. Gam baruch yiyeh. Otherwise, Yitzchak should have walked it off. He said, no, I mean, it's false pretense. I'm not doing that. Right? So, Esav is the one acting immorally. This is the Bechor Shor. You heard of Bechor Shor? Yosef Bechor Shor is one of the Bar Yatosis. He's very much a stickler for for defending Yaakov all over Bereishis. It's really very good at it.
So that means that Yaakov's mistake for analyzing is more deceiving his father, the keep it up idea, than more of a stealing idea? Or?
So this I have in a footnote in my Toldos. I write the following. That when Yaakov pushes back, right? His pushback is not because, mommy, it's just immoral to lie to daddy. No, he pushes back because he's afraid he will get caught. Right? He'll see me as a scoffer, as a fool, he's fooling him, and he'll give me a blessing, not a curse, not a blessing. So the mother's answer at that point is what convinces him, because after that he does it. What does she say?
She'll take the curse if there is one.
Let the curse be on me. Ibn Gaon very famously said that for the rest of his life he will be haunted by these three people that spell a lie. All right, cute. But she said, let the curse be on me, because after when all the things that fell down on Yaakov's head, you're going to take Binyamin, Shimon is gone, Yosef is gone. Remember he said, a lie, hayu kulana. Right? It was his admission, you know, I got all these problems from that back then. How different my life could have been. I wouldn't have had to go up to find a wife. Right? She would have been brought down to me the same way that a wife was brought down to my father. I wouldn't have had all those troubles with Laban. I would have just been married to one beloved. Right? All this is happening to me. And I'm losing children in my lifetime. Right. And then he hears his mother say, let the curse be on me. Right? Let the curse be on me. And then he goes and does it. Rashbam asks, what kind of a good son is afraid of doing something because he may be cursed? And says, my mother be cursed. Okay, I'll do it. How does that convince you? So Rashbam says that's when she finally told him, listen, this is God's will. God told me to Rav Yavo Segir, and this is how you have to fulfill it. Okay? And he went about it. Okay? He wants it. All right? But the ironies start to flow in with Vayetze and Vayishlach. And this, I think I assigned you Vayetze to read already. Right? Think of it. I mean, the signs are so patently obvious. He falls in love with a younger sister. He gets an older sister. Right? Now, Rashi mentions this agadically, but I think the agadah makes the point. Are you familiar with the idea that Esau gets Leah and Yaakov gets Rachel, the older gets the... Remember that? You familiar with that judgment? And that's why Leah's always crying. She's got weak eyes because she's crying. She has to stick. She gets Esau and Rachel gets Yaakov. Right? All right, but I think there's a deeper truth being told here. As soon as Yaakov said, so Yaakov, you made your bed and lay right there. You get it? You said you're the older, so you're getting the older. And it seems that Torah wants to bring home this point. And on this, I'd like you to be aware of this book. Habakkuk, the person who authored the book just recently died. He was a friend of mine. It's called Patterns in Genesis. That was the original book. And then he had a follow-up book. His name is David Sykes, Dr. David Sykes. Patterns in Genesis, and then the second volume is called And Beyond. It's about 1,400 pages. It is brilliant. It's called Patterns in Genesis and Beyond. Okay, this is what he does so brilliantly. is that he points out that, for instance, that throughout the descriptions of Rochel and Leah, I think I wrote this on the board already, they're called Ketana and Gedola, right? Bitcha Ketana, as Leah, Bitoha Gedola, right? But only when Lavan rebukes Yaakov for why he switched his daughters, does he say, Lo yeyose kein bimkomenu, in our place, you get it? In our place, as opposed to your place, I heard why you had to run away from home. In our place, we don't give, now say the next words in Hebrew. Atzi'iro lefnei habachira. Changes to more charged words involving Rav Yavod Tzair, Yisab Bechorecha. A katon and a gadol could be the second and the third children. Right? You get it? But l'sei satzi'ir l'fnei habechira implies something has to do with what we did. So if God doesn't outright tell Yaakov as he's running away from home, listen, Yaakov, magia l'cha that this should happen to you because of what you did to your brother. Right? We're about to celebrate Purim. You're familiar with the Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah that connects Esav's reaction. Anybody know the Hebrew? When Esav first hears that his bracha was taken, Yitzhak se'aka gedola u'mara. Let's think of the definite. Adna'ov, it says. Right?
To the case of Haman.
What, that's almost exactly except by Yitzhak. So the word evolved a little too, but by Yitzhak and Tzak is the same
Zion
word.
Zion and Tzak
mean. So that's exactly the terminology that's used in Megillat Esther when Mordechai hears of Haman's decree. Bereishis Rabbah draws a parallel. That's 1,000 years apart. This is like the bookends of Tanakh, Bereishis and Esther. Right? And the Medrash draws a parallel. It says, Yaakov, be careful, you caused tears to flow from your brother's eyes. There has to be penance for that. There has to be atonement for that. There has to be a correction. The point I'm making with today's lecture is that sometimes the correction is not so obvious like it is in Shmuel Bet, where the prophet records it. And then we could read the rest of the Sefer and say which one is the sword, which one is the family, which one is both, like Avshalom. But here, the careful reader with help from books like this can hear certain terminologies, ba'ochicha b'mirma, lamarimi sani. Right? You didn't come b'mirma? Right? Now you see what it feels like? And Yaakov looks into Leah's eyes in the morning. It's you! How could you do this to your sister? Right? Now be snarky. What answer does she give? Say the word new first. New, you didn't do something I just said.
Where you go, what were you talking about before when you're saying the Rachel Leah? What was the deeper meaning behind that? What's going on there?
Well, until Lavan responds to Yaakov, right, they're always called Ketana and Gedola, the little one and the big one. But only when he defends himself for why he switched them. Right? Does he refer to them as, right? As Bechira and Tzi'ira, which is more charged about regarding what Yaakov did. Right, and then we get into the whole, harangue about the children and their names and the fact that you have hitcharut between these sisters. Right, look, Yaakov did this and he had to leave home. Would he have had 12 children with one woman? Maybe. Right? All of this tension between his wives and so much suffering. I'm sorry, Yaakov, if you had stayed home and you didn't have this problem, Now look, of course it was meant to be. Let's close today's class by saying that Yaakov, like Yosef, amounts pretty much to nothing while they're at home. They become who they are after being tested away from home.
Well, Avram.
Right? So that's the test of Avram too, is live from the arts of life. Right? Okay? Yitzchak, who never leaves home, has hardly anything written about him. He's the guy in the middle. Right? He could not found the nation, and he could not be named after the nation. That may make him the biggest one, the best one. Right? Look at Shabbos Daf Pei Tes, and see what the Gemara there says about Yitzchak, and you will see the most incredible chiddush in your mind. Where God says, I'm going to destroy these people for what they did in the Beis HaMikdash, and Avram says, I'm okay with that. And Yaakov says, I'm okay with that. Based on the pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu. But Yitzchak steps forward a whole page of Gemara to convince God why you can't do this. And God says, Yitzchak, you got it. I'm with you. And Avram and Yaakov, I'm okay with that. Right? Maybe what the Gemara means to say is that someone who could see the good in Esav, if I have Yitzchak as Esav, can say, maybe he's a good guy to have as your defense attorney. I don't know. I don't know if that's the true answer. But it says Vayetze Yitzchak l'suach basodeh. He was a man of the field, so of course he would love ki vayesav ish or deatzayid ish sodeh. Vayehav Yitzchak esav. So he really related to him. Right? Okay. Then I'll close this out for today. I do have the exams here.